Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on the MP-18 fire and HOOPA, including an interview with the interagency team in charge of operations, and on a planned rally against logging in the Jackson Demonstration Forest that's taking on new meaning. But first, some local alerts and updates. This is KMUD News. Starting off with news from the City of Eureka. The City of Eureka and Link Housing are encouraging community members interested in affordable housing at the Mallard to join the interest list before it closes on August 21st. The Mallard is a 90-home affordable housing community being developed through a partnership between the City of Eureka and Link Housing at three locations in Eureka. Construction began in spring of 2025, and the first homes are expected to be ready for residents this fall. The interest list is currently open for 62 of the community's affordable homes. After the list closes, a public lottery will establish the order in which applicants are screened. The remaining 25 affordable homes will be leased through the Housing Authority's waiting list, along with three manager units. Community members can learn more about the Mallard, eligibility requirements, and how to join the interest list at www.themallardeureka.com. Also in Eureka. On August 8th, at approximately 12:10 a.m., a Eureka Police Department officer responded in the area of Union Street and West Wabash Avenue for a report of a theft from a vehicle. Upon arrival, the officer contacted the victim, who reported that multiple pieces of equipment had been taken from her vehicle. The victim advised that one of the stolen items could be identified by several EPD badge stickers affixed to the top. Before contacting police, the victim spoke with a male subject in the area and asked if he had seen anyone who may have taken the equipment. He indicated that he had seen a possible suspect fleeing the area. Officers checked the surrounding area, but were unable to locate the suspect or the stolen property. Later that same day, at approximately 8:15 p.m., the handling officers conducted a patrol check of the area in an attempt to locate the stolen property. An officer located the male subject who had previously spoken with the victim. The male was identified as 20-year-old Eureka resident Vincent Potts, who was known to officers and matched the description provided by the victim. Upon contacting Potts, the officer observed an item in the backseat of his vehicle that appeared to resemble one of the items reported stolen. Potts was detained, and a subsequent search of the vehicle confirmed the item was the stolen equipment. The equipment was identified by the EPD badge stickers affixed to it. An additional piece of equipment reported stolen was also located in another vehicle associated with Potts. Potts was taken into custody for possession of stolen property. The stolen equipment was recovered and returned to its owner. A reminder from the North Coast Air Quality Management District. The recent MP-18 fire, located just north of the town of Hoopa along the east side of Highway 96 within the Hoopa Valley Reservation, is generating the smoke mostly in Humboldt and Trinity County. Presently, smoke impacts are locally greater within the Hoopa Valley from predominantly northerly winds, affecting the town of Hoopa and Weechpec areas. Overall, smoke is mainly affecting the Hoopa Valley and then traveling southeast along the Trinity River, impacting towns along Highway 299 into Weaverville and Hayfork. Smoke is also traveling along the South Fork Trinity River into Hiampaum and seen as far south as Ruth Lake, and additionally affecting communities along the Klamath River within the Yurok Reservation. A shift in wind directions and change in the weather may also cause widespread haze along the coast and affect other areas. Smoke impacts in these communities will continue to see air quality index levels that range from unhealthy for sensitive groups to even periods of unhealthy to very unhealthy at times. From Cal Poly Humboldt. Housing and Residence Life at Cal Poly Humboldt will hold its annual emergency simulation on Wednesday, August 12th to test campus and community response teams. The exercise will take place at 6 p.m. in a residence hall. The simulation will be loud and include participation from Cal Poly Humboldt's Housing and Residence Life, University Police Department, and Campus Resilience and Response, the Arcata Fire Department, plus first responders from local agencies. Passerbys may see smoke coming out of a residence hall and actors crying for help. First responders will use emergency radios and campus traffic flow may be affected. The exercise aims to train university housing staff and local first responders on how to respond to a university housing emergency. The emergency simulation is intended to provide a real-time, realistic experience of an emergency, as well as provide the opportunity to test and evaluate a practical plan and practice communication among agencies. Housing and Residence Life began holding multi-agency emergency simulations in 1986. The exercise takes place each year in August. During a real campus emergency, the university will send timely messages to the campus community and post information on Cal Poly Humboldt's homepage. And a reminder about ongoing roadworks in Garberville. The Humboldt County Department of Public Works is conducting a surface removal and resurfacing project on Redwood Drive through this Friday, August 13th. Work is taking place from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Travelers should continue to expect 15-minute delays and are asked to drive slowly, follow all traffic control devices and road signs in the project area. Thank you for your patience while repair work is in progress. If you have any concerns or questions regarding the project, please call 707-445-7421. And up next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. The MPA team fire in the Hoopa Valley has turned into a complex event, and KMUD News has significant updates to share. The MPA team fire in Hoopa Valley has been burning since Friday, and as of this broadcast recording on Tuesday, August 11th, has spread to 2,107 acres with 10% containment. Evacuation warnings are still in place, and the fire has resulted in air quality impacts across our region. We'll start today's update with a briefing on specific firefighting operations from Travis Thane, Operations Section Chief with California Team 1, an interagency team brought in today to take over operations of this complex fire event.
Good morning, my name is Travis Thane, Operations Section Chief with California Team 1 with your operational update for Tuesday, the 11th. California Team 1 assumed command this morning at 7 a.m. Last night and yesterday, a lot of hard work was completed by the crews with our priorities down in Division Yankee and the Mill Creek area. Crews laid hose down from drop point 1 and progressed with handline all the way down to Mill Creek to start building the box to contain this Mill Creek section. We also continued to work helicopters in here all yesterday as we checked up the heat on the southern perimeter of the fire. Coming up here into the Oil Springs Road, crews extinguished hot spots, started laying hose, and built dozer line to continue containing the fire to the east side and then working up onto the north. Up here in Division Foxtrot, here in the Norton, above the Norton Creek area, crews started constructing dozer line out to build a catcher's mitt to start containing the north side while still working simultaneously off the 96 up the Norton Creek area with helicopters and crews and boots on the ground containing this northern section. This is some really steep country as they continue to work around into the 96. We are holding the 96 as the fire progresses and backs down. Just for perspective, it's extremely steep, cliffy, and crews are continuing to work in and extinguish hot spots that did slop over below the 96. We still have it contained to the east of the Trinity River, and we're holding the fire all along the 96. We ask for your diligence as the safety of our crews, as we have rocks coming off with the closure of the 96, and we still have fire down on the Highway 96. Coming around to this west side, crews are making real good progress containing this southwest corner as we bring line around, constructing hand line and dozer line and extinguishing hot spots all around this southern perimeter to tie it back in down into our Mill Creek to protect our values at risk down here on the Hoopa and our homes.
KMUD News wanted to learn more about the interagency team now in charge of the MPA teen fire in Hoopa Valley. We spoke with Information Officer Edward Dula of California Team 1. He spoke first on the team and taking control of fire operations in a multi-agency effort.
We took control or command of the fire this morning at 0700. We were here the day before to kind of, we call it shadow the team that was here before us, which was a Type 3 Hoopa Valley group. They did an awesome job. But some of the conditions and the terrain just was sort of out of a little more than they could handle so individually. So the team was ordered, and we all started coming from all parts of the country, mostly California, though.
And then in terms of how these teams are brought together, who is the overall agency, and then what agencies are you working with directly to combat the MPA teen fire?
Interagency complex incident management team, which means that we are federal, state, municipal. We're not under one agency necessarily. We're, like it implies, interagency.
Talked about the conditions getting challenging. What about the conditions on the MPA teen fire really triggered the decision to bring in the interagency team?
Where the fire started, where the Milepost 18 fire started, was in a previous burn scar called the Mill Creek 1 fire from 2018. That fire left a lot of dead standing trees, which really increased the hazard to firefighters. The steepness of the terrain here is so unique and beautiful, but also challenging. And so when firefighter safety is a main priority for us and the Hoopa Valley team that was on this before us, that's sort of the combination of factors that led to a complex team being called in.
Information Officer Edward Dula also further detailed the composition of the interagency team.
So we come with a team of roughly 100 folks that are experts in all the different fields that serve wildfire management, operations folks, logistic folks, safety, medical, aircraft, air ops, you know, public information, which is my role here. And we, that's who is managing the, you know, all the resources that we call in from across the country or here local, anything that's available to us. We'll generally bring them out and put them to work.
Lastly, Information Officer Edward Dula gave a further update on current fire conditions going into this evening, August 11th.
You know, we're really looking forward to an increase in overnight humidity recoveries or an increase to the relative humidity overnight. But the wind, currently the wind is presenting a challenge. The terrain will always be a challenge here. And so as we bring more and more resources in, hopefully we have the capacity to cover any new growth, but it's a windy day out here right now.
KMUD News and the interagency team working on the MPA teen fire in Hoopa would like to emphasize the importance of knowing your evacuation zone. Current evacuation warnings for the MPA teen fire in Hoopa include zones HIA-E-002-A, HIA-E-003, HIA-E-004, HIA-E-006, and HIA-E-014-C. If you do not know your zone where you live, we highly recommend checking out the address lookup at protect.genesis.com. Genesis is spelled G-E-N-A-S-Y-S. Y-S. That's protect.genesis.com to learn more about your zone. KMUD will keep updating you on the MP18 fire, and we greatly appreciate the efforts of firefighters, both local and from multiple states, along with the new operations coordination from the interagency team now in charge of the incident. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. The group Coalition to Save Jackson State Forest had originally planned a rally against proposed logging this Saturday, but that rally may be turning into a celebration, KMUD News reports. The group Coalition to Save Jackson State Forest has a rally planned at the Fort Bragg Town Hall on Saturday, August 15th, from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. However, that protest may be turning into a celebration, as California Legislator Bill AB 2494 is looking likely to pass and get to the governor's desk. The landmark legislation is authored by Assemblyman Chris Rogers and co-authored by Assemblyman Damon Connolly and State Senator Mark McGuire. The bill aims to redefine forest management in the state of California and redefines that management based on forest vegetation, water, and soils. Current management is favorable to the timber industry and a desire to keep demonstration forests as profitable entities, including for CAL FIRE. The rally was originally over 500 acres approved for logging in the Jackson Demonstration State Forest by Chamberlain Creek. The coalition claims that CAL FIRE is trying to get this logging done before new legislation and a co-management agreement with local tribes is in place. KMUD News spoke with Polly Gervin, a longtime advocate and attorney for tribal rights issues. She spoke first on how the old style of forest management was not compatible with native views on conservation, especially models that integrate profitability into their management.
So there wasn't much we could really do with the Indian vision of forest management when all the law, the management plan, the Forest Practice Act, everything was in favor of the loggers. So to do really indigenous management, we did not feel the process that's been established for the demonstration state forest comported with viewing the forest and the trees as relatives, as part of an organic interconnected web of life, which is the Indian view. There was never, before the invasion of the Europeans, never a concept of you cut the trees for profit. It just was not an indigenous perspective. Even in the intertribal sinkhole model, they allow for thinning. But it's just not the end result. It's for maintaining the forest, not for gathering profit out of the forest.
Attorney and tribal advocate Polly Gervin also remarked on predominant forest management viewpoints from local tribes in Mendocino County and how CAL FIRE's experimental approach to demonstration forests causes issues.
And this group, the Mendocino County tribes, don't believe in it. Don't believe you cut redwood trees in their infancy under the name of science. It's just a different way of looking at the world. Science is basically hypothesis. So, you know, either you're wrong or you're right, and maybe you've destroyed a whole lot of trees and you find out you're wrong, or the bogus science that was done at Jackson. Oh, my God. They would clear cut a watershed to see if sedimentation developed in the rivers. Of course, everybody knows that.
Polly spoke on CAL FIRE's current timber harvesting plan for the Jackson Demonstration Forest.
They are trying to go forward with timber harvesting activities under the old commercial logging plans, under the old pro-commercial logging law, and do so before AB 2494 passes, which should be this week. And then we have to wait the governor's signature. So what they're doing is they're trying to do an end run along the law before it changes.
Polly Gervin also emphasized the bigger picture of forest management issues inside California and how AB 2494 allows an opportunity for a new conversation on forest management.
The movement is willing to accommodate thinning for forest management, et cetera, but just not to make money to pay off CAL FIRE. We have to come up with alternative means of funding CAL FIRE that is not cutting trees in the demonstration forest. So I think we really have to look at the bigger picture right now, not like the 500 acres or the Stillette plan on Camp 8, you know, the one big mother tree and everything clear cut around it, which to me is just obviously crazy. But look at what we need to do to make sure we need to look at what we need to do to get our long-term voice on forest management enshrined under the new law and implemented under the new law and under the new mandate.
A native-led approach to forest management is also not without precedent.
There should be consensus decision-making process between the tribes and the foresters, as there is in Canada, as there is in Australia, New Zealand, where any decision on what trees are going to be cut and why has to be met by mutual co-management, which means co-equal co-management, which means the tribes having an equal voice to the foresters.
The rally for Jackson Forest to stop logging and pass AB 2494 will be at the Fort Bragg Town Hall at noon on Saturday. But the planned rally is turning into a likely celebration.
And we'll be dancing in the streets, honey.
So
come dance with us, because I'm going to be dancing in the streets if we get this bill passed by the end of the week.
Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. California Congress members Schiff and Khanna reintroduced bill on AI use in politics as Democratic congressional candidate Wiener uses campaign chatbot. KPFA's Lauren Schmidt reports.
Targeted and mean-spirited campaign ads are nothing new during election season, but the growing use of artificial intelligence is. California Senator Adam Schiff and Silicon Valley Congressman Ro Khanna recently reintroduced the AI Ads Act, which would prohibit deceptive AI-generated content that misrepresents political candidates, campaigns, or committees. But what happens when a campaign creates an AI chatbot impersonating its opponent? That's the controversy now playing out in San Francisco's congressional race, where State Senator Scott Wiener's campaign created a chat bot of his opponent, San Francisco Supervisor Connie Chan. Wiener posted an image of an advertisement billboard on social media, reading, quote, "Let's do nothing together, ConnieChan.ai, paid for by Scott Wiener for Congress," close quote. The promotion, however, has seemingly backfired, with several commenters, including some who said they had previously supported the state senator, described the chatbot as misogynistic and racist. Supervisor Chan would also respond on social media.
"Well, my opponent just launched an AI chatbot to mock me and make up stories about me. But here's the truth. AI companies are spending millions through Super PAC in this election. They're trying to buy influence in our government. They're also replacing our workers and harvesting our data. They call AI inevitable. I call it a choice. And Congress has a responsibility to make sure AI serves the public, not corporate profit."
Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi, whose congressional seat Chan and Wiener are seeking to fill, also criticized the chatbot. Pelosi wrote, quote, "Women have spent generations fighting to have our own voices heard in the halls of power. We should not have to now fight against artificial intelligence putting words in our mouths," close quote. The criticism was echoed by San Francisco Supervisors Jackie Fielder and Cheyenne Chen, as well as the Harvey Milk LGBTQ Democratic Club. KPFA News reached out to Wiener's campaign for comment, and his communications director responded by forwarding a press release that characterized Pelosi's criticism as baseless. It reads in part, quote, ConnieChan.ai, a clearly labeled parody site, effectively chronicles Connie Chan's horrific track record on housing, transit, education, and other issues, which is why they hate it. Close quote. Weiner would accuse Chan supporters of fabricating, quote, bogus accusations to deflect from that fact. KPFA News visited the website and asked the chatbot how it felt about the site. It responded, quote, I'm afraid I don't have much to say on this particular topic, but I do have a whole range of other matters I'm quite knowledgeable about, close quote. It offered 8 suggested topics it called favorites, including, quote, blocking housing, being weak on crime, and failing education. I put the F in SFUSD, close quote. Weiner's campaign said it reviewed all 5,058 questions submitted to the chatbot during a 27-hour period, from the 3rd to the 4th. And according to the campaign, 109 questions, roughly 2%, targeted Chan's accent, race, gender, appearance, or citizenship. The campaign says the chatbot rejected or deflected them, and alleges that many of the offensive prompts were submitted in, quote, coordinated bursts by Chan's supporters, close quote, which he said was an effort to produce a racist or otherwise inflammatory response. Weiner also pointed to his record of pursuing regulations on artificial intelligence companies and described Pelosi's criticism as ironic, pointing to her track record on the issue. But Supervisor Chan says the responsibility lies with the campaign that created and published an AI impersonation of her.
Scott Weiner built a chatbot with his AI donor. I built a plan that make AI work for the working people.
Speaking to the San Francisco Chronicle, Chan's campaign spokesperson Ian Krager said, quote, instead of apologizing or taking responsibility for his bigotry, Senator Scott Weiner is blaming everyone else. That's easier than explaining why someone who claims to be a leader on AI safety chose to use this technology as a political weapon of deception and misinformation, close quote. In Kentucky, Republican Congressman Thomas Massey was targeted by an AI-generated attack ad during his unsuccessful primary campaign. He warned that older voters, in particular, may have difficulty recognizing or understanding AI-generated lies. The video in question used AI-generated images to depict Massey holding hands, going on dates, and entering a hotel room with progressive Democratic Congresswomen Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar.
Thomas Massey caught in a throuple in Washington.
The ad included a disclosure in small print identifying the images as AI-generated. Speaking to Tucker Carlson, Massey said the depictions were hyper-realistic and convincing. Massey says some constituents later told him they voted against him because they believed the images were real.
There's a disclaimer at the beginning in font that nobody over the age of 65 could possibly see on the TV.
Massey was one of the few Republicans who opposed the war with Iran and pushed for the release of the Epstein files. For KPFA News, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have stories important to you that deserve more attention? Are there issues we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmod.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Sikyone, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.